The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Hill and I'm joined today by Katie Balls and Fraser Nelson. Now Katie, this morning Greater Manchester Police have announced that following a reassessment of the case, they've decided to open a formal police investigation into Angela Rayner over claims about her former living allowance. Katie, talk us about this story.
So I think this is clearly a development and I think it does make the allegations more serious than perhaps what they have been in recent weeks, which is the Tories just trying to like throw something at the wall and see what sticks, distract from Labour's local election campaign and try and really neuter or limit the abilities of one of their, you know, strongest media performers from the Labour perspective, Angela Rayner, often the one going out there on the attack. Now, what this all relates to is two properties, one owned by herself back when she was married to her then husband, Mark Rayner, and one owned by Mark Rayner. Hers was on Vicarage Road. If you are from Stockport, these addresses might mean more to you than they do to us. And the second one, her husband's, was on Landers Lane. It all comes down to whether Angela Rayner was correct to say her primary residence and her main residence during this period was Vicarage Road. And this is just before she became an MP. The accusation, which first came about in Lord Ashcroft's book, The Red Queen, the unauthorised biography of Angela Rayner, is that she was really living at Landers Lane. And therefore, when it comes to the sale of her Vicarage Road, former council house property in 2015, she could have been liable to pay capital gains tax, which she did not pay. And also, she could be in breach of electoral law because she was registered to vote at Vicarage Road, but neighbours say she was staying at Landers Lane. Now, she denies both of them. I think what has moved today is that the police have said, after being addressed by James Daly, the Tory deputy chairman, previously to say you need to look into this again because look what the neighbours are saying. They're saying she was wrong when they said there was nothing before. They now, you know, said from that they were assessing whether or not they're going to investigate. Today they're saying they are investigating. And the understanding is this is to do with the electoral law and whether she was in breach of this. I think the Tories would also, in their dream scenario, like to get HMRC to open an investigation on the capital gains tax point. Angela Rayner has denied doing anything wrong the entire time, but said she's not going to publish the advice she has from an accountant publicly. The response from Labour today is to say they welcome might be a bit optimistic, I think really is how they're feeling, but they welcome this investigation as a chance for Angela Rayner to share the advice she has and share the information, and they're confident she'll be cleared. So how much of a problem is this for Labour? I think that at the very least, what the Tories have succeeded in doing with this row and the way they've been pushing it and now this, you know, successfully pushing it to the point the police have opened an investigation, is they are limiting Angela Rayner's ability to campaign. And they're also blunting Labour's attempts to get its messages out, because every media appearance by anyone in the shadow cabinet, including Keir Starmer, who was asked about yesterday, comes down to Angela Rayner and what do you make of this story that's going on. Now, Keir Starmer says he has confidence in Angela Rayner and he's satisfied with the legal advice, but he himself has not seen the legal advice his team has. So I think looking at where things are now, I do wonder if the holding line from Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner and those that acted to defend her is going to have to develop. I mean, they can just say the investigation's going on, but I do think now there is a police investigation. People will say, Keir Starmer, you know, you're a trained lawyer. Yeah, you're a busy guy, but can't you personally have a look at the advice this person has and see it rather than saying members of your team have? So I think it is a headache for Labour, at least in the short term.
Fraser, what's your thoughts on all of this and this trend about legal investigations into politicians?
I think it's regrettable, actually. It seems that we're all going down an American route here, where there is a sort of parlour game on to see if you can find a politician guilty of some relatively minor criminal thing, call for the prosecution, and then politicise it. We saw this with the Cash for Honours with Tony Blair thing, with the SNP. Angus McNeill basically reported Blair to the police because he thought Labour donors were getting awards afterwards. And it has gone downhill from there. I think that Boris Johnson was guilty of a great many offences when he presided over lockdown, but to be you know, busted for the relatively small infringements. I thought it was wrong that anybody would get criminally prosecuted for infringements, let alone those in number 10. And so what we do, we're now risking going down a system where, well, take in France, for example, the French parliamentarians are immune from prosecution, but you get the situation where as soon as a president finishes office, he basically gets sued. Like Sarkozy got sued for spending twice as much money in his campaign than he could have done, and now Sarkozy's being sent to prison for 6 months. So it seems to be an increasing amount of politicised litigation here. Now, I think Angela Rayner, whether or not she owes the tax man, I think it's £1,500, is an important matter, but I think it's being leapt on as something to try to beat Keir Starmer with to get. It's relatively minor, I would say. It's no bigger or smaller than it is with anybody else. Now, of course, you can decide to be all pious and say lawmakers shouldn't be lawbreakers and the higher standards should be set for members of parliament. I would accept that, but I would, you know, discourage conservatives from joining a game that Labour enjoyed playing, and indeed Rayner herself enjoyed playing when the boot was on the other foot.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, which is that Labour reported, you know, Boris Johnson to the police in December 2021. They called for him to resign after the Met opened their investigation in January 2022. Surely this is, you know, what's good for the goose, good for the gander.
Well, I don't think it's good for anybody. I don't think it's good for politics. I don't think either side should be playing in those games. Now, I don't think they should be immune from prosecution. I think it was richly deserved that those who made those ridiculous lockdown rules were stung by them eventually. But to elevate this into a sort of quasi-resigning matter, the Tories are attempting to do with Angela Rayner, I think is just a bit of a distraction. There are a whole bunch of reasons why they'd have a problem with Angela Rayner, but what she did with the capital gains tax, I don't think is one of them.
I think there's a question as to, should Angela Rayner have handled this differently? Because it's been, from I think the get-go, she's been quite private about it. And you can say, look, she is entitled to privacy on this. These relate to largely to what happened before she became an MP. She sold a property very soon after becoming an MP in 2015. Therefore, you know, another argument people make is, she is a working class woman who perhaps could have made an innocent mistake when it comes to capital gains tax. You can't really, as some of the Tory party want to say, well, look at Nadeem Zahori. He had to step down. He was sacked. And I did say to someone in close to Rayner and Labour, and they said, well, you know, he was in a Treasury role. He had been former Chancellor. And therefore, there's questions, you know, it's a slightly different thing. There's also the levels of sums involved. Now, people can come back, it's principle. I think the issue for Angela Rayner, to your point about, you know, everyone now in the Tory party is pushing this tweet she sent during Partygate, where she says, you know, Boris Johnson, can you really stay as Prime Minister while the police are investigating Downing Street? And therefore, because she is the one who is often to go out there and say, you should step down, you should be sacked, and for these things, it does put her at risk, I think, of hypocrisy charges on this issue, and therefore perhaps more transparency from her side. Or even, you know, I think Angela Rayner is much better at defending herself than her colleagues are. David Lammy on Sunday effectively eventually came up to her after quite a stressful morning round that she was a Northern woman, so lay off. Same tax bans, as far as I understand, same tax rules depending on where you live. And unfortunately for me, my gender, I still have an awful tax return. but secondly, he then moved to this idea, well, there's different standards when you're in government. You're like, okay. But this is Labour that's talking about giving an independent ethics advisor almost a statutory role whereby they would have a say over the Prime Minister if people break the ministerial code. So I think it's hard when your message is that you want to increase standards in politics because they've fallen. I think this does get into tricky territory if you start going down that line. And maybe Angela Rayner early on calling like a one-hour press conference and just going for the questions would have got it to a better place. I mean, as we're sitting here, obviously bookies odds, but you know, William Hill sending out odds slashed for Angela Rayner to leave Labour, saying, you know, Angela Rayner's future at the Labour Party's increased scrutiny, could she leave? I think the problem for Keir Starmer, if he does conclude, and I think we're some way off this, by the way, but say he concludes, in theory, Angela Rayner's position is untenable, she is impossible to sack. Maybe not impossible, it's incredibly difficult. She is one person Keir Starmer really, really needs to keep on side.
Because she's directly elected by the members,
exactly,
unlike anybody else in the Shadow Cabinet, yeah.
And therefore, you end up in a situation whereby he can strip her of Shadow Cabinet briefs, but he can't stop her being deputy leader because, like himself, elected by the members. So the only way you could actually remove Angela Rayner from deputy leader, I was speaking to someone about this, you would have to get the parliamentary party to move to vote her out. Then if she could get the, you know, the percentage you need from the PLP, which I think is about 20%, she could also still stand again to be deputy leader when the grassroots get to pick again. So at that point, is Keir Starmer risking and was creating this power base? So you think about how fractured Jeremy Corbyn and Tom Watson's relationship was. Jeremy Corbyn leader, Tom Watson being deputy. It's all pretty unfortunate. And there is a reason, since I think that terse 2021 reshuffle, where there was a big disagreement between Angela Rayner, she refused to take certain roles. There's been an effort by Keir Starmer to try and strengthen ties with Angela Rayner, and more recently Sue Gray, who gets on very well for Angela Rayner, because she is just very powerful in a unique way that no one else in Shadow Cabinet has.
And all of this in election year as well, where they're trying to take the focus on the Tories. On a slightly different, but nonetheless related Labour story, Fraser, Keir Starmer's been out today splashing two of the newspapers with his comments about defence spending, how he would try and increase it to 2.5% of GDP, conduct a defence review, and also really wants to take the fight to the Tories on all of this. So talk us through the story.
Well, this is a verbal position by Keir Starmer. It's not a firm spending pledge. What he said was that he would like to see defence spending at 2.5% when conditions allow. Now, those are three magic words, and that's another way of saying never. I mean, I looking at Fed, cannot see any time where there's not going to be very deep pressure on public finances, because the tax burden still is a record high. Labour's going to come into power with huge numbers of demands for extra spending, which is going to have real difficulty fending off. So the situation where Keir Starmer gets away with massively increasing defence spending at the expense of education or health, I can't envisage it. But what's significant, I suppose, is that he's positioning himself to the hawkish end. He doesn't want anybody to let it be said that Britain would be less safe under a Labour government. He's also preparing for a Donald Trump era, where Trump's main demand of his allies will be that they step up to the plate on defence spending. And also into an international arena now, where you've now got Poland, the Baltic states and others spending significantly more on defence. It used to be the case that Britain was and was the second biggest spender on defence in NATO, but now we've been overtaken by quite a few countries. So you can see the need to go there, but you can't see the mechanism for which Starmer would deliver it. So I think I would say it's a significant verbal positioning we've had today, but does it amount to a policy? Nowhere near it. And by the way, the same is absolutely true for the Tories. They've said they would like to spend more on defence, but when conditions allow. But for neither of those parties, I don't think conditions are ever going to allow. And I think the underfunding of the military will be a serious problem that we're going to be confronted with, I hate to think, sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think the conditions allow point on the Tory side, you could have a lot of it. Frustration at number 10, because it feels as though you could say conditions allow soon after the mini budget with Liz Truss, and you know you're having to do all these tax rises to get the markets back on side. Now it feels, speaking to you know various figures in the party, it is just a political choice. It's a choice of where you want to go, to Fraser's point. Do you want to cut NI? Do you want to fund the defence budget? And therefore I think on the Tory side, there is a push to try and get a 3% figure in the manifesto, but without some of those conditions. But I think it'll be a hard ask.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Fraser. And thank you for listening to Coffee Hour Shots.